With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You two are one of the OGs of the podcasting world.
Bullshit, mate.
Yeah.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name is Serge.
And my name is James.
Doesn't even feel like a week off, that we've had a week off break with the takeover week, James, and we're back recording and podding and talking FPL.
Well, let's not bullshit anyone. It's Wednesday during our week off, so.
This is it, man. Plans weeks off, and then 2 days in. So we saw each other on Monday after the England game, and a day off yesterday. We didn't really chat yesterday. And then this morning it was like, right, I'm planning the rest of the content. We're going to be busy. I was like, that's only been a day. It's literally only been a day. But yes, we are pre-recording for our Content Creators Week. James, do you want to introduce our guests?
I shall. This is a big week for us. We've obviously got some big names joining us during the podcast. And we start with one of our favourites from the FPL community. Please allow me to introduce you to Pranil Chef from the FPL Wire, known to many of you on Twitter as Late Riser 12. How are you, Pranil?
I'm doing great, actually. This feels quite surreal because you two are one of the OGs of the podcasting world.
Oh, bullshit, mate.
Yeah. So it feels quite surreal to be on, yeah.
You know what? James just said that known to people on Twitter as Late Riser 12. Let me tell you. So I think the first time I remember any interaction with you was when James was doing the Champ Man streams during the first lockdown, if you remember. I mean, I didn't know who you were. We probably never crossed paths. And I remember we were in the chat. I think you asked me if I was Gujarati at the time, because you're from the same part of India as me. And so just a note for James, we'll be able to swear at you in the same language later. You won't understand, but I'll save that.
I don't normally understand in English, so it doesn't particularly matter, mate.
From that point, I was asking myself, what's Laterizer? Honestly, I read it and I was like, Laterizer. I was like, what is it? And for ages, I never twigged. And then obviously after obviously your storming season and so much, and then you were talked about in more places, a bit of scout, bit of here, and people started talking about Late Riser. And I was like, right. For like a few months, I was thinking Laterizer 12. I've got it wrong. And yeah, now I kick myself. What a dick.
At least 50% of them thought it was Laterizer and not Late Riser.
Really? Okay, yeah, so I'm with them.
That never went through my mind, I've got to be honest. That's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Brown, tell us a little bit, for those who don't know you, I guess it'd be one or two. Tell us a little bit about you and your FPL history, and then we'll come onto your pod in a bit as well.
So I'm just somebody who's obsessed with fantasy sport in general. I mean, and it comes with a friend of mine, right? We've been playing some sort of fantasy sport for the best part of 13, 14 years. Lots of friendly wagers, lots of reputation at stake. It started with BBC Fantasy, and then there was an ESPN Fantasy game, and then we discovered FPL. And so we kept playing FPL. We used to play a lot of monthly competitions, and then 2 years, after 2 years of playing FPL, I discovered the Scout. And which was essentially a cheat code, because you had a little community there that was just talking to each other, bouncing off ideas off each other. And we were figuring out how to crack the game. And that's when I started doing well in the game. And I've been fairly lucky in the past 7, 8 odd years. I've got a few top 200 finishes. Been lucky with that, but had a proper reality check last season when I finished 700k. So yeah, it shows that, you know, there's both sides of the curve when you're playing. I generally have a slightly more unconventional style of playing this game. I'm actually quite happy, you know, that at least given the platform that I have on Twitter, I'm able to at least showcase that you can do well in this game by playing in an unconventional way. That's something I'm most proud of. when it comes to just the platform that I have on Twitter. Yeah.
All right. So you told us about the shit season, but big yourself up. Tell us about the good seasons.
So the good seasons, right? I mean, there was no FPL Twitter at that time. It was primarily just the FFS boards where I used to spend a ton. It was college days during those times, so you had a lot of free time on your hand. So I used to spend most of my free time being obsessed with this game. I used to do tons of long posts on the forums, and we used to discuss how to beat this game. And I realized that groupthink was predominant on the boards as well. They're like a small spectrum of what the FPL Twitter community was, which exploded into the FPL Twitter community later. But groupthink was prominent, and people were a little afraid of doing something everybody wasn't. We didn't even have effective ownership as a concept back then. And I was actually very influenced. Mark is the guy who created the site. He's also sort of a maverick in the way he plays the game. And there were a few people on the forums who I got really inspired by, and all of them were just very aggressive in the way they play the game, just very fearless in the way they play the game. And I started learning from them. I started talking to them, and you're making friends, right? Talking to them, spending time on the forum, you're learning the ways, you're learning the concept of value, you're learning the concept of captaincy, you're learning the concept of sticking to big hitters, switching them about. And I realized temperamentally I was okay with slightly bigger or smaller red or green arrows. And I found my playstyle spending time on FF Scout, and yeah, clocked a few good seasons.
I don't think I've still found my playing style. You touched on quite a lot of stuff there. I mean, you mentioned me and James as being OGs. Like, Mark is proper OG, OG of all of them, really. He's going to be on later in the week with the Content Creator Week with Az as well. So I'm quite looking forward to his different playing style. You talked about herd kind of mentality and groupthink being really interesting. And Tom from Who Got the Assist is really big into that kind of stuff. Again, it sounds like I'm just plugging all the other guys that are on this week, but
don't leave anyone out, Sage.
No, when I was listening to a pod they did on psychology, I was really fascinated by, like, you come up with an idea on Twitter that you think is maverick, and then a few more people say, actually, yeah, that's really good. And by the end of the conversation, it's stupid to go against the maverick. What started at the beginning of the week as a maverick pick is completely not at the end of the week. But then Twitter, as we know it, is such a small bubble of fantasy players. Was it the same back then where you're in your small community, but the people on Scout that were commenting and posting articles probably weren't representative of the majority of players?
Not at all. It was a handful of us. I'd say like 200, 300 of us that used to be regulars.
Wow.
on the forums and discuss. So it wasn't influencing anything. You weren't, if you claim to do something, you weren't held by what you claim to do. It was like the three of us doing our homework together. We're trying to figure things out together. And right. that was the sense of community that existed in the Scout at that time. Right now, it's just blown up and there's too many people. And it's difficult to have a proper conversation with the same people day in, day out there. And actually, it's one of the reasons, one of the things that I think it's very important in FPL. And that's having the right ecosystem in terms of, ideas come when you're talking to people, right? Let's say you and me are talking about FPL, and I say that this is probably a thing that you should do, and you're bouncing off that, and you're like, you know what, don't do this, do that. That conversation leads to good ideas. And that's something I didn't have last season. It's something that I wish to streamline this season in terms of having a good ecosystem, having the right people to bounce your thoughts off as well. I mean, even on the pod, I mean, we do the FPL Wire. I'm podding with Bakar and Zofar, who are both fairly conservative managers. And I like bouncing off ideas with somebody who's... it's good because they balance my opinion in terms of, this is rubbish. They filter out the really bad ideas. But it's nice to have somebody who's willing to take risks and bouncing off opinions of those people. Because they... So when you're talking about finding your playstyle, it comes down to, I think, primarily identifying your temperament. So you're somebody who can't fathom an extremely huge red arrow, and it really affects you, and it totally screws up your weekend, then this is not the way for you to play this game. If you can fathom it, yes, take some more gambles, take some more risks in the way you play the game. But if you can't, play the more conservative
percentages.
Yeah, of course.
Exactly. So I think you need to first be very self-aware. And I'm glad you mentioned the pod that Tom did. I was listening to it before we're having this chat. And it was great because you tend to learn so much about yourself. And I think then you should determine how you want to play this game after you identify what you're temperamentally good at. Because this is a game of discipline that you're playing over 9 months. So let's say I've decided that I'm going to play this season this way today. It can't happen. What you're thinking 2 weeks later is going to be very, very different. So that mind state in terms of discipline needs to be consistent for 9 months.
I think
say one thing?
Go on.
Brano, if you at any point said to Suj, I think you should do this, there ain't him coming back and telling you this, that. He's just going to fucking do it, mate.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of polarizing opinions or ways of looking at FPL, aggressive versus being conservative, eye test versus stats and so on. Leonardo da Vinci, James, you know what he said? The definition of genius is being able to hold two opposing views in your mind at the same time. That's it. And having people on your pod, Pranil, that are the opposite of you and being able to look at it from both angles at the same time is hugely beneficial. I just think I just don't give a shit enough.
This is the problem. This is what, for us, Pranil, because you're on first during this week, right? And we've got a week full of, listen, let's not be honest about it, Suj. Guys who are a lot better and know a lot more FPL than us, right?
Yeah.
And me and Suj, currently, at this time of recording, we are not in an FPL headspace at all. And we know, like for yourself, you dropped a pod the day the prices came out. It came, in my and Suj's opinion, the game came out too early. We know why they did it. It's fair enough. But we just weren't in the headspace to pod about it. I couldn't tell you 90% of the prices yet. Earlier today, before we started recording, I was thinking, I need to have a look at FPL because I need to know more about the prices and stuff. And I didn't, because I'm not in the headspace yet. And I think for me and Suj, this week, I think for us, mate, is a little bit of a journey. And I think maybe by the time we get to Friday, we'll be like, right, let's pick a team. We think we know what we're doing. Obviously, in game week one, it'll absolutely properly bomb. But I think we can pick up little bits from the experts that we speak to this week.
Yeah,
call people experts because we ain't.
When people talk to, like, quite often when we do Q&As or the live shows and people are like, what do you enjoy most about the pod or the journey of Planet FPL? The reality is it's got nothing to do with FPL for me. I have a bigger, deeper, better understanding of football and a bit deeper love of football from spending hours talking to James about football. His knowledge of football is far better than mine, but I'm learning from him all the time. And all of my joy and satisfaction comes from football. And then FPL is just the kind of sprinkling that goes on top. We're just getting all of our listeners to just leave us, James, because they just want FPL content now.
I think there's an influence because of what happened with our nation in the Euros as well, right? Had an influence on that. Maybe if England had bombed in the group stage, it might have gone, let's get season five up and running a little bit quicker.
If I was an England fan, I don't think I'd be sitting here chatting. I'd still be in some bar.
No. Trust me.
No,
listen, we can. The genuine ones of us. Listen, there are some nice English fans out there.
Yeah.
Please understand, we're not all bad. Most of us couldn't wait to get out of the bars on Sunday night, except for me, because I had £67 still on the tab, which had to get spent, obviously. But no, there's no rush for me to go back to a bar when England are playing anytime soon. I actually hope that by the time the next tournament comes around, my son might understand so I can watch the games at home.
But just on that note, I mean, you two are English fans. I wouldn't say commiserations, I'd say congratulations. Because I think that's two solid international tournaments back to back. I mean, a semi final and losing a final on a coin toss. I mean, that's great if you ask me. I mean, your country is definitely going in the right direction when it comes to international football tournaments. I wouldn't be worried at all. It's all looking very, very promising.
Thank you, mate. Can I just say, if it was a literal coin toss, we still would have picked incorrectly. Although it probably would be better for us than a penalty shootout.
Tell us a bit more about The Wire and what you're doing with your co-hosts and what have you.
So, this is something. So I've been a part of the community, like I mentioned, right, for years and years. And I happen to have three good seasons back to back, and then I started getting a couple of offers in terms of, writing or talking. And so talked to my wife about this, and I'm like, you know what, I'm not really sure about this, because FPL is such a great passion and it's such a great hobby that I don't want to make it work. You know, I mean, that was the perception that I had at the time before starting to write or before starting to pod. I just like it as a passion where I'm spending hours and hours. And she's like, you know what, it's not going to seem like work. So I have to credit her and a friend who pushed me. So just give it a shot. And then I applied at FFS, got to write. And I've been a part of that community. So Bakker, who does threads at the moment, he's created a WhatsApp group where there are about 40 of us talking FPL, FPL ecosystem, what we talk about, bouncing ideas off each other every day. And we've known each other for the past 3.5-4 years. So Zofar's on that group and Bakker's on that group. And I had that great season on the first year spending on Twitter. And Zofar's like, you know what, do you want to talk about it? I think it'll be a good mix, because, you know, you're sort of aggressive and I'm sort of conservative. And we both got talking about it, and we always had it at the back of my mind on a back burner. And before the start of last season, I just said, you know what, let's just do it. And then we ran with it. And the entire idea was to just not be a very opinion-focused podcast, but be an information-focused podcast. But the perception in terms of how you view that information and apply it is different, because Bakker looks at it from a very statistical point of view. Zofar looks at it. He's a conservative manager, so he looks at it from a very conservative point of view. And I look for the opportunities, and we're still learning off each other. So I think it leads to a good conversation, and we're still learning while doing this. So yeah, that's how it started, and the response has been great. And now it's just such a relief podding every Tuesday, because working hours are quite tough, and you're actually looking forward to Tuesday, just chatting with the boys, talking FPL, and we laugh a lot while we're podding. So it seems like we're having fun.
That's it.
Yeah. Who do you all support?
I support Manchester United.
Yeah. And you support Man United, boy.
Yeah. Zofar supports Chelsea, and Bakker doesn't support a team. He used to support Man United, I think, 5 years ago, but then he's taken the face of a neutral, and he just enjoys.
Wow, that's a glory hunter gone through that. Is that the opposite of a glory hunter, isn't it?
Sir Alex retires, I'm going neutral.
he's probably got jerseys from every team in the league, I think, at the moment, and he keeps switching it up. I can't relate to that at all, and he's going to kill me for mentioning this, but yeah.
So I got a question, because I have just logged into the FPL website. And I logged in to have a look at your history, because you seem a little bit reluctant to give out your overall ranks. So I'm going to do it for you, right? 2011-12, 132,000. I won't order the years, but this is what follows. 189th, 2212, 77th, 49,000, 8,000, 12,000, 30th. Then you started a podcast and finished 678th. Are your friends the problem?
Do you know what? Before you answer that, James, if you added up all of his ranks for all of those years put together, apart from last year, it'd still be higher than my best ever rank. Sum them up and it'd still beat the majority of my managers' best ever.
Do you know what? If you actually take out the first one, I said 132,000, 11, 12, because I feel like that's probably where you started.
That's the year I discovered this.
That's actually factually correct. Yeah.
Incredible.
On a serious though, because it's something we've heard a lot of other content creators say, and I was listening with Tom's on from Who Got This on the pod with us tomorrow, and I've listened to obviously the Behavioral Science podcast as well, and it's one of the things he's mentioned. I know he's mentioned it in the past, the idea that you say something on the podcast and you almost feel obliged to stick to it. Have you found this year, because you're now creating content, that you've found that influence with you? Because I know there's a lot of you, I feel, that comes from a gut feel and an urge to kind of go against the grain and stuff. Have you found that there's been times this year you've done something early in the week, and because you've said that, you've ended up sticking with it?
Yes, but I don't think it was the biggest problem last year in terms of how the season went. If you notice, there's another season that I finished 50,000. So in the last 8 years, 50,000, and the season last year, which was 700K, they're my poorest seasons, and they happened after I finished in the top 100 both times. So every time I had a really good season, I screwed it up the next year. And then there's a clear thing. I mean, last season, game week one, I went without Mo Salah. And when you're finishing 30th in the world, the head is thinking that whatever you're thinking about this game is correct. There's a sort of there's no filter in terms of, because you know how easy it is for our head to just create theories, okay, that this is going to work, this is going to happen. And you build all these theories in your head, and then there's confirmation bias, which Tom spoke about on the pod. I had no filter because I was like, I finished 30th. I know what I'm doing. I have all these good ranks, and there was no filter. So I had a miserable start. And then I was still at around 3 million, 4 million around game week 10. And it just happened to me that when it hit me that I realized that I was just an overconfident prick, that it was one of those seasons where it was really, really, really difficult to make round. Because generally how I like playing the game is I like switching around your big hitters and try to not care about value when it comes to those big hitters and try to gain 30, 40 points in terms of captaincy that nobody else is gaining. Now, what happened last year was we had only four people scoring 200 plus points. There was Kane, Salah, Bruno, and Son. Nobody else. There was no Man City player that did well. Man City is generally how I make my money in FPL, because a lot of people are very skeptical of going there when it comes to Guardiola. And City didn't hit 100 goals last season. So I went in big on Man City. I had three midfielders from Man City on my Game Week 3 wildcard. And again, there was no filter. I wasn't reading. I wasn't sitting back, taking a pause, thinking macro. And I think creating content also led to this, because I was focused. It was the first year of creating a pod, right? So I was focused towards, you know, making sure that the content that we put out there is good. Think about it in your first five or six game weeks of creating a planned FPL. You're really focused towards making sure that the content is good. And there wasn't a moment where I was, you know, off Twitter, off creating content, off talking to Zoff and Bakker about what we're planning to do. Pausing, sitting with my own team in the night and having a little bit of a macro think. You know what, this is how City have started, this is what's going to happen, and actually thinking about how I want to play the game. I think that's a trap that most FPL players fall into, because once the season starts, you're completely into buying good players and selling bad players. But you should not just think about that. I reckon you need to pause after three or four game weeks. You need to think macro. How many big hitters are actually doing well? How many of these mid-price players are actually doing well? What do I need to do in the future? What am I predicting that's going to happen? And you need four or five game weeks of data before you sit back, take that pause, and think about how you want to play the season after. So yeah, I didn't find myself taking that pause, and that's something I want to do this year.
Yeah, it's a very valid point though, isn't it? Because we fall into that as well, Serge. I mean, sometimes you don't even make the deadline. So, but I think exactly that will be the switch in mindset that you've had subconsciously, is your brain now is thinking, I would bet money that you value the podcast more than you value your FPL rank now.
Yes, I do.
But all of us.
Yeah.
The content in terms we provide has got to come in terms of, that's the pride in terms of what you're doing. You know, if someone thinks, oh, you got a shit rank. But if someone says to me, your podcast, crap, I'm probably a little bit more offended than that. If someone says, James, you've got a shit FPL rank, why'd I listen to you? I go, fine. We'll choose to listen or don't listen. But your mindset now is now thinking towards, well, I need to make this content good, yada, 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 yada. And then that's the same for us. For me now, it's probably, I have my initial reactions from the games and I think, okay, this is what I maybe do. And then probably from Monday to Thursday, I don't even think about it. It's all the stuff in the middle. Then Thursday comes around, after we've done like Clash of the Correspondents, and I think, okay, what am I actually going to do with the team this week if I haven't made an early transfer, for example? So yeah, it's interesting though, because I think a lot of content creators will find that subconsciously, that I don't know if there's anyone who started becoming a content creator and is definitely now doing better than what they were doing before. Just to pick up one point you make though, Prano, about your ranks dropping them off the great season. You must have felt terrible about the season. You went from 8,000 to 12,000. It's disgraceful behavior, mate.
No, I'm just talking about the great seasons, because like the top 100 season, you're
that
thinking,
is a great season, mate.
Yeah, it's all relative, right? Because when you're on a hot streak, you're on a hot streak, and that's what you think as a relative point of perception. That's all. I'm not trying to boast it. I'm just talking like, when you're on that hot streak, your brain works in weird ways in terms of making you believe things that are not true.
Do you think, Pranil, the fact that you went without Salah game week one last season, do you think there was any influence on that, that after finishing 30, if you were thinking, well, if I want to finish first, I've got to go against the big hitter at the start? Was there any of that?
Nope. I'll tell you what it was. So I had Salah in my draft right until the last week, where, you know, you're sitting one Monday night just tinkering with your team. And then I really bought into the Timo Werner and Kai Havertz hype last season. And if you remember, Dele Alli was doing really well in preseason as well. He was playing central, and Mourinho was talking him up a little before game week one. And I was just playing around with the draft, and I got rid of Salah, and I got in Dele, I got in Timo, and I got in Kai. And I got rid of Saint-Maximin as well. And I was like, you know what? This looks good. I like the look of this. And then that, at that point, my head said, you know what? This is fine. And there wasn't a filter which said, you know what? But you're getting rid of Salah. He's playing a promoted team game week one. I mean, that filter wasn't there. So that's exactly what happened. There wasn't any thinking about, oh, I've spoken about this, or I'm creating content. It's just that idea zeroed it in my head on that Monday night before game week one.
You weren't the only one that went without him. I did. Do you remember, Serge?
Yeah, me. But I think I was just thinking, I went with Havertz and Werner as well in game week one last season, and it didn't particularly work out. Well, there was the week, I can't remember whether it was five or six, where Werner did do well as a captain. I think he scored 16 points. But yeah, I didn't go with Salah as well. But I've got a longer term issue with Salah. I didn't own him a lot in the first season that he joined and did particularly well. And I kept telling myself week after week, it's not going to carry on. It's not going to carry on. It's not going to carry on. And I continued to go without him. And now I just find it hard to bring myself to go back to him, because I told myself for so long that he wasn't going to perform. But the thing with FPL is there's nothing more satisfying than when you go away from everybody else and it works well. When you go with your gut on a decision, and then as a captain or even picking a player and they get a double digit haul, it's just one of the most satisfying feelings.
But you have to time it. You have to time it. You can't want to do that every week. You have to find a week where it's all right to take that sort of a gamble. And there needs to be sufficient enough, strong enough reason to bet against the favorite that week. And I've been doing a lot of, 700K season, right? So I want to do better next season. So I've been looking back, and I have all the screenshots of the past five or six seasons saved. And I like to go anti-template with my picks. And this is one thing that stood out. And so in a season, I used to hit five or six game weeks where I used to get game week ranks under 10K. That's when you're going against the template with your captaincy and it's coming through. 90% of those under 10K game week ranks happened after game week 15. I managed to get only two game week ranks under 10K in the first 10 to 15 game weeks. What that tells me is the start of the season is a roll of the dice, right? Your subconscious is not assimilating information in terms of what's going to happen early season. It's a roll of the dice. You don't know who's in form. You don't know who's looking good. You don't know. We've got four or five new managerial appointments. You don't know which teams are a target. I think it's a good time of the season to go with the herd. If you want to throw in a punt or two, this is what Tom Freeman does. Throw in a punt in the 6 million, 7 million price bracket where somebody is not going to be heavily owned. Somebody is not going to be heavily capped. And when you start reading what the season is looking like, when you start assessing, when you start watching the games, there's subconscious that's building a lot of data. That's when you back yourself to, you know, bet against the template, not early season.
So you won't be going without Salah in game week one then?
No, not a chance. Definitely going with Salah.
I don't think I will be either. But then is that part FOMO now a little bit? Or is it just exactly what you're saying? He is the best choice in game week one this season. I think most of us will agree with that. And therefore, you just go with it on this occasion.
Yeah, and a little bit of macro strategy, right? You stick with the pack at the start of the season. I want to give myself an opportunity to give myself the chance to shoot up the ranks in the latter half of the season. And that's not going to happen if you're 2 million, 3 million halfway through the season. You need to be amongst the pack around game week 18, around December.
I think, Serge, I've always had a subconsciousness. I think take Robert Sanchez is probably a good case example where his ownership's really high. He obviously looks like a decent punt, 4.5. I know it's kind of, you were mentioning on the Wire podcast the day the prices came out, you were talking about there might not be save bonuses with him and bonus points and stuff, but he's steady at his price. You can't argue it too much. But he's one of them where I'm beginning to look at it that it's almost so obvious, and he start looking at alternatives. And I think, well, because his ownership's so big, is he actually, if Brighton don't start well, is he actually going to start nosediving and coming down to 4.4 and 4.3 if Daniel Backman, I know, was one you guys were mentioning, that suddenly, or he becomes this year's Emi Martinez, and you think, well, should I go down that train? Or is it better to just go, well, I'll go with Robert Sanchez first, for example? It's a kind of lesser example of Mo Salah. I think I've always had that subconsciousness of, if I'm not sure on a player and his ownership's really high, I'll probably go against. And I think that's where I was at with Salah this time last year. But I think the fact that he's got the two very good opening fixtures, I think he's just not worth gambling against this year.
Yeah. Salah, I'll be starting the season with Salah. But the goalkeeper one's an interesting one in Sanchez. He was like literally everyone on Twitter and content creators were talking about how he's going to be the goalkeeper. My gut instinct was immediately to look away and see, well, who else is there at 4.5? And then I started looking at Dubravka at Newcastle, and I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Other than injury, started the previous season at 5 million, as did Darlow, but he's come down, and mainly because he missed so much of the season from injury, but end of the season, he was back. They like to play five at the back, so they're just the defensive team. Graham Jones has been there longer and is a better coach. Like, they'll be better coached now. And I've got myself in this mindset now. I've talked myself in that, sod it, I'm getting Dubravka because everything that I've decided as reasons to get him is good. Whereas Ben White's going to go to Arsenal and Lewis Dunk might get bought by someone, and then Brighton are going to be rubbish. So that's what I'm going to do.
Serge, so, you know what stood out to me when you were telling us that? What stood out to me was because he's so highly owned. That was the first sentence. This happened to me last season as well, because I have a problem with somebody being so highly owned. And I was just thinking about what went wrong in the season and things I want to implement next season. And I wrote down on a piece of paper that stronger filter, lesser ego. And remember, the Twitter template is well-researched. Like, the guys on Twitter who are creating the template, who are inspiring the template, they're spending hours on this game. It's well-researched. So if you're backing against it, you better have a bloody good reason to back against it. Don't have that outlook towards the Twitter.
It's arrogance that I know better. It's completely that I look at what everyone else is thinking. It's arrogance. I'll put it down to I know better. And it's funny. I've got a cousin who plays, and he's a really good player, like consistently top 25K, top 50K for the last three or four seasons, not involved in the community, not involved in Twitter. And when he gives me the logic and reason behind his decisions and the way he makes his decisions, I can never understand it. He's just like, nah, yeah, I'm not going to go with him because Brighton are rubbish against all the lower teams. I'm like, well, what kind of logic is that? That's just such an emotional opinion that's not based on fact, or you've not watched Brighton play all season. And he's inevitably, invariably right. And then I sometimes think, well, sod all of this research, because people that are making decisions just off instinct and gut are doing better than I am. So what do I know? What does the Twitter community know? You know, it's a very difficult one. I put it down to, yeah, pure arrogance. If everyone else is going one way, I'm trying to give myself an excuse to go in a different direction.
But actually, if we look at it a little more closely, Sanchez isn't in the template at the moment. Obviously, Emi Martinez is. His ownership is still at 5.5 million. He's 40% roughly, right? So if Emi Martinez does flop and they've got a great opening three fixtures and Brighton do start well and Sanchez already got that ownership, where do you think the Martinez money's going? It's going to Sanchez, isn't it? So, I mean, it's interesting. Can we just go through a few template players, Pranil, and kind of give me where you think maybe we can swim against or not? So we've already said Salah. I mean, at the moment, he's going to be around about 50%, or maybe a bit more once we hit kickoff. We're saying, I think we're probably saying now, we're captain game week one. If he's fit, we know he's not.
And two, yeah.
And two, yeah. Well, Prano wants to go with a Man City player, I think, because they've got Norwich at home. But we're going to start with him, I think. Luke Shaw's second highest owned at the moment, 42.6%, 5.5 million. What's your thoughts on him, Prano? It's obviously, you're a United fan as well. He's had an unbelievable summer. In fact, he's had an unbelievable 12 months.
Yeah, he's great. I think he's an incredibly good pick. He's on some set pieces as well, and he's sort of a ball progressor for our team. He's actually not playing as a fullback. He's in and around. He's not exactly hogging the touchline as well. He's closer to the D when he's making the runs because he's driving the ball inside. But you must have seen that with England as well because he's not always hogging the touchline. I think he's a fabulous pick. Fabulous.
No, he's evolved from the... careless is the word, I think, which is completely wrong. Enthusiastic. Like, he just used to hit the touchline all the time as a kid when he was at Southampton. Just to burst and run with it. And he's evolved. He's become a very good passer of the ball now. He's a completely different player, actually, to what he was as a kid. There's possibly quite a lot of impact on that and the injuries and off-the-field stuff he's suffered as well. It's a different player now. He's evolved fantastically.
Even when it came to the injuries, which, sure. So he's always had these phases of 10, 12 games for United. Then he always got injured again. But every time he played, he got those first 5 games out of the way. 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th game, he was fabulous. So once he gets a little bit of momentum going, he's always been good, in my opinion.
Do you look at someone like him and think, his price is wrong, I want him? Is that more important to you than the percentage ownership? Like, do you look at him and think, oh, I had him down at 6 million, therefore that's why I want him, rather than, oh, he's 42% owned?
Neither. Fixtures.
Okay. Yes. Do you like United's opening fixtures?
Yeah, I do like them. I think they're pretty good. I like the fixtures. Yeah. So, but the debate that I'm having in my head for that 5.5 million spot is Shaw versus John Stones. Because I don't think Laporte is a threat to John Stones' starting position for that Manchester City defense.
Agree.
And it's his goal threat is tremendous, and they are arguably the best defense in the country. So John Stones is somebody I'm thinking about.
See, okay, I don't think Luke Shaw would be that highly owned if he was 6 million.
Agree.
I think there's an influence on this as well. And we've seen this after major tournaments before. Like after 2018, the England players were massively owned. And I think you're getting a bit of that as well here. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Luke Shaw's ownership would not be that high if England had gone out in a group stage of the Euros. It's not to say he's a bad pick. I don't think he is at all. Bruno, while we're still on United, Bruno, thoughts?
A good option to Zach, in my opinion. Especially with Rashford out. I'm going to be paying really close attention to our preseason in terms of what Ole is thinking. Because Rashford's out, and that could mean that Sancho's playing on the left or the right. That could mean that Greenwood at 7.5 could get a lot more minutes. That could mean that Cavani could be nailed for the first 4 or 5 game weeks. I like Cavani for the first 4 or 5 game weeks because we don't have any European commitment as well. So he's good to play once a week. And I think at 8.5, he's a really good pick at the price point. But the striker pool is flooded with really good options that have no problem in terms of expected minutes, in terms, you know, you have Watkins, Antonio. But I think there's opportunity there to spend 2.5-3 million lesser compared to everybody else, because I don't think he's going to be very highly captained in the first 6 game weeks. Every time Bruno is a good option as a captain, either Poole or City have a good alternate captaincy option. So I think that's an opportunity, potentially.
Yeah, I think there's one where it combines possibly with Spurs as well, actually, depending on what state we're in. But I agree. There are times that you can oppose Bruno. There's 3 Villa players, which if you combine their ownership at the moment, would take you above 100%, which is Martinez, we mentioned. Jack Grealish, we think he's staying at Villa at 8 million. And Ollie Watkins, 7.5. What's your thoughts on Villa at the start?
Depends on whether they're with Grealish or without. I'm not very convinced about them without Grealish, but... Luke, who I spoke to on the pod yesterday, was very, very bullish on Bundia, and I haven't seen the championship, and he didn't look convincing the last time he came into the league, or Norwich rather didn't utilize him correctly the last time he came into the league, and but it's a very safe bet considering the 3 fixtures that they have up front, right? And it's a 6.5 million price point and a 7.5 million price point for Watkins up front. The good thing is that it's very easy to move into other good options, because I like both those price points. So you move out of Watkins into a 7.5 million striker, there's a lot of options. You can even spend a little more and go into Bamford. If you're spending 6.5 on Bundia, 3 weeks later, there are a lot of options. Arsenal's fixtures are gold, game week 4 onwards, so you can move into Osaka, you can move into Rafinha, because Leeds fixtures are great game week 4 onwards as well. So I like those price points. I think the decision is going to be whether you're going to go in with 1 or 2 Villa attackers, because the fixtures are good only for 3 game weeks. That said, I mean, the thing that I have in my head is Villa pulled off a lot of their big results last season against the big guys. I mean, they were the bogey team for the big teams, so they like to play.
I think you can split it into with and without Grealish. You returned for the last two games and they beat Tottenham and Chelsea. I mean, it pretty much kind of sums it up, isn't it? It's two different teams with and without him. So he's obviously going to be important if he stays. And I guess at the moment it looks like he probably will. Then that makes them very interesting for game week one if he's going to be in around the team. Although I think Watkins for me would be the one from the three that would interest me most at the start. What's your thoughts on that, Suj?
Grealish.
I just can't. Even at eight?
Yeah, at eight, I think. I'm just looking at his goal involvement and everything running through him. For me, Grealish at 8 million. I'm not. Watkins is a maybe. I've got Ivan Toney lined up as definitely at 6.5. I think he's worth a risk as a promoted player. I want Bamford. I think he's going to be the main man up top at Leeds. And then it leaves me one other striker slot. I don't think it's going to be Ollie Watkins. And I only want one Villa player. So assuming Grealish is there, I'll be going Grealish, I think.
Shout out to our friend Luke at FPL Irons. Had a great appearance on your pod. And I know you spoke about Ivan Toney in quite a bit of detail, 35% owned. Did he influence you, mate, on Toney?
He did. I was not very convinced about Toney, to be very honest. But he talked me into it. And he's somebody, I trust his judgment because I've been listening to the Wolf pod as well. And I just like his assessment of players. And he looked very, very bullish on Toney. So I'm thinking about him a lot more than I did earlier. And I was worried about Brentford in general. But the way he spoke about Brentford, where they're heavy metal action, all-out attack, similar to Blackpool, and his involvement percentage is close to 50%. It's just a very strong case for Ivan Toney.
I would definitely be the talisman. It'd be the clearest talisman I would have thought in the game, probably, actually, which is why he's so popular. Another forward who's got a little bit of traction again, Calvert-Lewin, just under 30%. These forwards all had a little bit of a hike, haven't they? Has that put you off any of these at all, Pranil? Has someone like DCL fallen? Because Everton have got a good run for about 8 game weeks, I think, haven't they?
I'm not very convinced about Everton at the start of the season, because I don't think the fixtures from an attacking point of view are very convincing. Okay, you've got Saints at home up front, but then Leeds is a good team now. Brighton are a good team now. They play Burnley, and I think they'll revert back to sitting back and defending, and then they have Villa. So I'm not sure I'm very convinced, I mean, about DCL at 8. I think I quite like the look of Antonio at 7.5, Wilson at 7.5, Iheanacho at 7.5, probably more than DCL at the moment.
I saw today Everton in the hunt for Dumfries, Jones.
At time of recording, it'd probably be signed by the time this goes out, knowing our luck. But yeah, there are strong rumours they're going for Denzel Dumfries.
So something like that happens, then suddenly I'm thinking whipping in balls for Dominic Calvert-Lewin seems a little bit much. Now he's got ammunition from both sides coming in, maybe. So obviously there's a long way to go with transfers as well. If he was to sign, for example, Calvert-Lewin becomes more interesting for me as a potential third striker.
Imagine a Rafa side with them two brilliant attacking fullbacks, Dumfries and Dean. That's going to drive everyone mad next year. You know that.
They'll be don't cross the halfway line. I can imagine him just sitting there. Don't cross the halfway line. Yeah.
If anybody wants your opinion on Harry Kane, I invite them to listen back to your podcast. I heard it once and don't want to hear it again. Shut up, Serge. I have a Trent problem, Branil. But I think having listened to you, I think you might have the same problem. He's going in, isn't he? Game week one as well.
Absolutely. Without a doubt, he's going in.
Is he first name? Is he actually more than Salah?
No, Salah's first name. I'm still open to the thought of Robertson because he tends to start the season well. But I think there's 1% chance I don't go with Trent at the start of the season.
Are you kind of convinced because of, I mean, we've probably all seen the pictures now of Van Dijk training. They've strengthened up in that position with Konate. Gomez and Matip might be fit as well. Nat Phillips is probably going to disappear on loan somewhere or get sold. Is that what's kind of convinced you now? And the way, obviously, Trent finished, we did it on our quiz, didn't we, Serge? Like, Trent's statistics in the second half of the season are unreal. And when you break that down, it makes it very difficult to go without him, I think, again. I can't see me not starting with him, even though there are so many good budget defenders. I can't see me not going with him again.
And the thing with him is, right, it's always, with Trent, it's always easier to sell if he doesn't work than to buy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's an easy decision.
You took the words right out of my mouth there. I'm thinking if I'm going to start with Trent, knowing that I can go anywhere from him if I feel like he's not going to perform.
Are you conscious of that, having across, say, the four positions, at least having two where you've got the top price, for example, in that, like Salah and Trent, for example?
Yes, I am. Yep.
The biggest influence on Trent for me is literally that, what he finished last season at. It was such a stark reminder of goals, assists, open play, everything. And Liverpool did get better defensively as well. It was a real reminder of the Trent that we love to own. So, yeah, that's why I'm definitely going to start with him, I think.
Also, when it comes to the teams, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead.
It's just something that's playing on my mind. I think Liverpool are going to have the strongest and the longest preseason with their main players. When it comes to Chelsea, the German boys haven't joined the camp yet. And we don't even know who's going to be starting up front for Chelsea. When it comes to City, De Bruyne might or might not be injured. They don't have a striker at the moment, so nobody knows what's going to happen there. Spurs is a new coach, new team. I think...
Same shit. Probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Liverpool have a strong and long preseason where the players are spending a lot of time together. And I think after last season, they'll be up for it. So, yeah. I'm even thinking of going in triple Liverpool at the start of the season.
Yeah, I might be doing the same. You thinking, Serge?
Two, definitely. Salah and Trent. I don't know if I'll have enough money to find a third. Depends where to go.
I just feel like I'd probably sacrifice somewhere else, mate. Because I think they've got a great start. You've got to be highly motivated as well.
Yeah.
After, obviously, last season. It's become very clear, I think, Premier League now. I mean, last year's a little bit of an anomaly, isn't it? But generally, to win the league, you've got to start this season well. City last year was the first team in a number of years that started a Premier League season badly. And I mean, they kind of turned it round between December and February. They were out of it, so to won it because of the way Liverpool fell away. It's unusual someone starts well and falls away like that. Liverpool have got to have their eyes on mind with players back fit, I think, to start very, very strong. The one City player that stands out to me as a differential, just to bring in a couple, and you can throw a few out there if you want, Pranil, that I like, he's a City player, which will interest you, is Ferran Torres. At 7 million, at kind of under 4% owned, because there's a fair chance he's going to start through the middle, and he's playing a shitty Tottenham game week one, mate. I wouldn't be put off by that at all, actually.
I think it's a fair shot. I just want some more knowledge in terms of pre-season, what Pep is thinking before going in, because they've got so many attackers. So.
Knowledge of what Pep's thinking is no good to us. I heard you on your pod as well saying about Pep preparing for the Champions League final for 9 months and then doing the exact opposite thing anyway. So what good's the knowledge with him from pre-season or anything? You might get something from the Community Shield, but not a lot.
That's what I said earlier as well. I like indulging in City, because not many people like doing that. So, because they're capable of putting 5-6 past anybody on their day. So it's something I like to try doing. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But if it works, it can give you hefty gains.
See, the one that I thought you might mention there, James, was Riyad Mahrez. Because again, he's always 150, 160, 170 points a season. But then when we were talking about him at the end of last season, it's literally 2-2-2. 15, 2, 5, 2,
1, 1, 2, 20. 15.
Yeah, so it's you've got to stick in with it to get the big hauls. But if you're patient enough to just stick with it and ride it out, at the end of the season, it kind of pays itself. But with your strategy of trying to find the moments to catch the big return, it makes it even harder with someone like Riyad Mahrez.
Agreed. Well, what do you think about City? How do you think they're going to play this season? Are they going to play in the same choke-holding way they played last season?
You know, one thing that I would say about City is what he's coming out in the press with, like, we don't have money for a striker and we're not going to be buying anyone. I don't believe any of that. I think that's all BS. I think behind the scenes they're doing things and we're going to see at least two players, decent big players, come in. So I'm going to make a judgment call when I see that. I think everything that he's saying in the press conferences is just to try and drive prices down, or it's aimed at Daniel Levy, isn't it, really?
I see how he's tried to bring me talking about Harry Kane into the podcast now, which is absolutely fine. I'll do that. I know you were talking about Kane, and if he's at City, then he's definitely going. And I think a lot of us probably would rework our team. Harry Kane's not going to be playing for Manchester City in game week one. That's a near certainty. He might be in game week two. That's why I like Ferran Torres as well, because he might just be the one week in there. I don't know if I could justify him in the case of Mahrez, who's paying $2 million more than Torres. And he's finished the season well. He's had a good Euros. Yep. Didn't go too late in the tournament. It wasn't like he's playing 90 minutes in every game during that tournament. He had more involvement for City towards the end of the season. I think that he's a young player. I think he'll have more involvement this year. And he kind of falls into that line, Prano, you said about Eric Freeman's idea. I know he's a little bit more expensive, but at $7 million, it's still in around that pocket. You can take the punt at that value, surely.
Okay.
Yeah. That's easier to do that at $7 than Mahrez at $9. It's got to be. Mm.
Yeah, I was thinking about Mahrez early season. I won't be lying about that, because he started the season strongly in their Champions League team. So I'd pay closer attention to their Champions League stats towards the end of the season, because he stopped playing the first team in the last 7-8 game weeks or so. But he's a sensational player. Even for Spain, I thought he was really good. So it's just something about Martin. We don't have enough information at the moment before making a call.
I want to thank you, Prano, because I've thought more about FPL over the last 45 minutes or so than I have in the last 45 days, mate, honestly.
Yeah, it's got me thinking. Like, there was a moment where I got a pen, and I was going to pick up my pen and start writing stuff down, like punts are for the second half of the season after game week 15. Just hearing that alone has made me think about how I'm going to be managing my team. Yeah, it was really interesting.
You'd be talking behavioural science with Tom Cantwell tomorrow. You'd be thinking the opposite, probably, mate.
Yeah, he's gonna mess around with my head in a different way.
Brano, as an absolute pleasure, mate. We could talk to you for hours on end. Thanks for coming and being a part of our week. We'll come on yours at some point. Get me on, don't
yeah, for sure.
Forget
for
about
sure,
it.
Sure. Yeah. So before you go, plug everything you're doing. When's your pods normally coming out? Because I know you're increasing your content this year as well on that, mate.
So you should just search for the FPL Wire on YouTube, and that's where you'll find us. We generally do our regular pods on Tuesday evening, UK time. You should find it there. And most of my content, you'll find me on Twitter at @laterizer12. That's it.
Nice.
Patreon.
And yeah, in case you want to support us, you can log on to patreon.com/the FPL Wire.
No, I was going to thank you for being one of our patrons, but you can plug yours as well, mate.
Yeah, lovely. Nice.
Brando, pleasure, mate. Thank you indeed. So much.
Before we wrap, a lot of our listeners are going to care mainly about FPL, maybe not about football in general, but I'm going to ask you this question while I've got you on, and anyone that doesn't care can literally say bye. Why there's a big fandom of Premier League and football in India. We know cricket is like dominant. Why are India not good at football? Or what will need to happen? Because I'm born and bred in England, right? A lot of my friends around here. But with the population size and the fandom and the love of the sport, what needs to happen to get India good at football?
More money into the sport at the grassroots level. That's what you need to do.
But it's a wealthy country.
Yeah. So there is investment that's happened in the last 5-6 years at the grassroots level, what with the ISL and all of that. But it just needs to happen at a more grassroots level and more consistently. I think we're still 10 years away from being anywhere in the conversation in international football at the moment. Probably one breakthrough star that's going to one of the top leagues like the La Liga or the Premier League. I think that might also just help our country gain a lot of traction in terms of football as well.
Is there a club cheap enough that I could buy it and James could manage it? Because like even Division 3 no. Somewhere, come and find one, because we'll be over there. Actually, James won't. He'll be screwed.
No, I'll still be down top.
I'll tell you, he wouldn't be able to eat, Prano. One of the first times after we'd recorded the pod, I thought, James, all right, let's go out after work. We'll finish the pod. We'll go and grab some food. There was a game on. I can't remember who it was.
West Ham Huddersfield.
Okay, thriller. James remembers this, right? And there's a decent curry place near us in North London. I thought, let's go, no worries. Didn't even ask James if he he'd want to eat.
Decent. It's shut now, by the way.
His spice level is zero. I didn't know. So I take this guy out. He wouldn't survive in India. You'd struggle, James.
All right, yeah. I got that.
But he could manage a team, I reckon. I'd be really fascinated. It's interesting because my kids don't really get into football, but as soon as they picked up cricket, they really got into it. And I was like, well, probably in the DNA now, isn't it, really? But for a country with a love of the sport and the potential to invest in it because of the amount of money in cricket, I find it fascinating. It takes a long time to build up any kind of infrastructure where players might be produced that might be making it in some of the bigger leagues.
So I was going to say, is the money there in cricket, or is it not as important as in cricket? What I mean is, in terms of to invest the money into the grassroots, is it not as important, or is all the money going into the grassroots in cricket in India?
All the money is going into the cricket, but there is a strong investment curve that's started happening in the last 6 or 7 years in football as well. And the biggest industrialists in our country, they're the guys putting the money into football right now. So there is a positive growth curve happening.
Do you think it's got years? It will catch up potentially, because you look at, I consider it a similar like to maybe football in Africa in years gone by, where the talent is there, but it's taken a lot of clubs now, Premier League clubs have gone scouting for talent, and then they're the ones putting the infrastructure into academies and training and youth and what have you, thinking, you know what, if we can put academies in these countries, when the talent comes through, we can pick it off and so on. And that's the way that it might develop in Asia as well.
Yeah. That's already happening, by the way, since the last 5 or 6 years. You have Arsenal setting up camp here, you have Man United setting up camp here, Chelsea City. They're all looking to scout, placing the network in this country as well. So that's already beginning to happen.
Yeah.
It'll come then. It's good. Takes generations and that to change that. You don't just set up training camps and suddenly India are qualifying for World Cups and stuff.
No. Yeah.
You're probably looking at a kind of another 10 to 20 years or so to see the fruits of that cycle. I mean, I remember China coming out with outlandish stuff kind of 20 years ago. We're going to win the World Cup in 8 years and stuff like that. You know, it doesn't happen. You need to kind of build the foundation. If it's happening, that's good, because I mean, I'd never really thought about it really, Suj, but yeah, country that size, it's remarkable. We never even speak about it, do we?
No. But then obviously you're not a big cricket fan, but cricket, IPL and international cricket, particularly in India, is as big a deal as Premier League football is in England, and is dominant in so many ways. So it just happens to be that the focus is on a different sport, but with football being the biggest sport in the world globally, obviously, you'd want to catch up in that space. I'm fascinated.
Was it Baku who said, Pranil, didn't he go on the Premier League India show? And he was talking about the fact, like, all the conversations now in India is about FPL and stuff, though.
Yeah, that's Zafar.
Zafar.
Yeah. So he said that. Yeah. A lot of conversation, especially around my generation and the younger ones. Everybody's watching a lot of football nowadays as well, especially in the metro cities.
So it might evolve. It might just come naturally, you know.
Yeah.
I look forward to it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Pranil. We've had a number of places put requests for Planet FPL Lives in, so it'll probably be Planet FPL Live 15 before we get to Mumbai with a live show. I'm touring James around Nairobi. We're making it to Birmingham, and
just
a few
about
other places.
Got the London Bridge, mate. One step at a time.
Yeah, that's true. And it will be a while, but one day, you never know. It may happen.
Fingers crossed. Maybe we can set up a soccer school while we're there.
Yeah, let's do it. Pranil, thank you so much for joining us. James, do you want to give the listeners a little rundown on the rest of the week and who they have to look forward to?
A shout, yeah. Tom Cantle next coming on tomorrow. We've also got Andy from Let's Talk, FPL General, Mark and Az from Black Box as well. Fire week brilliantly started by Pranil. Thanks
indeed.
So much, mate.
Yes, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
And listeners, wherever you are around the world, make sure you are staying safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to each other. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Podcast Network.